Welcome back, everybody. We're diving into a fascinating story today, a case study that really makes you think about the power of money, not just to, you know, make more money, but to actually do some good in the world.
Yeah, it's a really interesting example of impact investing, which is something we're seeing more and more of these days.
Right, using finance as a tool to tackle, you know, social challenges. So where are we headed for this deep dive?
Well, we're going to the heart of the Bronx, to a place that used to be synonymous with, well, frankly, with some pretty dark times, this Spofford Juvenile Detention Center.
Spofford.
Yeah. Yeah.
That name alone probably conjures up some not so pleasant images for a lot of people.
And rightfully so. This wasn't just some, you know, run-of-the-mill detention center. Spofford was notorious for allegations of abuse, neglect, really terrible conditions. It was a place that for decades really represented a lot of systemic issues we faced.
And it was a long, hard fight to get it shut down, right?
Absolutely. The community fought tooth and nail for years to close Spofford. They knew that this place was causing more harm than good, and they weren't going to let it continue. And finally, in 2011, they succeeded. Spofford closed its doors.
Wow. So what happened to this piece of land, this symbol of, you know, all these struggles?
Well, that's where the story gets really interesting. The city decided to take this place that had caused so much pain and try to turn it into something positive. They envisioned a transformation, you know, affordable housing, green spaces, job opportunities, basically taking something that had been a drain on the community and turning it into an engine for growth and opportunity.
So it's like they're trying to rewrite the narrative of this place.
Exactly. And that's what makes this case study so fascinating. It forces us to ask them from really big questions, like, can you really heal old wounds with new investments? Can you create a future where opportunity thrives, where hardship once stood?
It's a powerful idea, for sure. Mm-hmm. But like with any ambitious project like this, I'm guessing there are a lot of challenges along the way.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what we're going to unpack in this deep dive. The financial decisions, the negotiations, the trade-offs. It's a story about a lot more than just balance sheets and profit margins.
That's what makes it a deep dive. So let's get into it, shall we? So we've got this huge site, right? This blank slate in a way. And it's not just about putting up buildings. It's about righting a wrong shape, you know, creating something that benefits the community that was so deeply impacted by Spofford's troubled history.
Absolutely. And that's where things get really interesting, because you've got these developers and they see this massive opportunity, chance to not only be a part of something positive, but also to, you know, turn a profit.
Right. Because at the end of the day, they're still in the business of making money.
Exactly. So they come in with this proposal for the first phase of the project. They're calling it Phase 1A. And it involves building this state-of-the-art industrial space, you know, something that could attract businesses and create jobs.
Sounds promising.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing this kind of development doesn't come cheap.
Not at all. We're talking about a $30 million price tag for just this first phase.
Okay, so that's where the rubber meets the road, right? How do they plan on funding this thing?
Well, they've got some pieces in place. They're asking for a $15 million grant from the city and have already secured $5 million in loans. But that still leaves a $10 million gap. And that's where Eric and the NYCEDC come in.
Ah, so they're looking to the city to bridge that gap. I bet Eric doesn't just hand over that kind of money without asking some tough questions.
You know, Eric, he's all about making every dollar count. And the developers are asking for a pretty sweet deal. A $10 million loan at a 1% interest rate over 40 years.
1% over 40 years. That sounds almost too good to be true.
Right. And it gets even better. They've also requested that the loan be completely forgiven after the first 10 years.
Wait a minute. So essentially they're asking the city to treat a big chunk of this loan as a grant. I mean, that's a pretty sweet deal if they can get it.
Exactly. And that's where Eric starts to dig deeper. He's looking at their financials, their projections, and he's starting to see some discrepancies. Things that make him question whether their numbers are realistic or if they're trying to downplay the potential profitability to get a better deal.
So it's like a game of chess now, with both sides trying to make the best move for their interests. The developers want to secure favorable terms, and the city wants to make sure it's a smart investment.
And remember, this isn't just about dollars and cents. It's about the future of this community and whether this project can truly deliver on its promise of positive change.
So it sounds like Eric is walking a tightrope here, right? Trying to balance the needs of the community with the city's financial realities.
It's a delicate dance, and this is where his expertise really comes into play, because he's not just looking at the big picture, he's zeroing in on the details. And one of those details is that $15 million grant the developers are requesting.
The one they're hoping to get from the city.
Exactly. It comes with a catch, something called a prevailing wage requirement.
Now, I'll admit, I'm not a construction expert. What does that mean in plain English?
Basically, it means the developers would have to pay their construction workers a specific wage set by the city. It's designed to protect workers from exploitation, make sure they're earning a fair wage, but it also adds to the overall cost of the project.
So it's a trade-off.
Right.
Doing the right thing often comes with a price tag.
Exactly. And in this case, that price tag is an estimated $6
million. $6 million. That's not insignificant. I'm guessing the developers weren't thrilled about that.
Let's just say it wasn't their favorite part of the deal. But Eric sees it as a non-negotiable. He's using his leverage to ensure that this project benefits the community from the ground up, starting with the people who are literally building it.
So he's baking social impact into the financial terms. Now, what about those generous loan terms the developers were hoping for?
Well, Eric wasn't sold on those either. He sees right through the 40-year loan with potential forgiveness after 10 years. To him, that's basically a grant disguised as a loan. And he's committed to structuring a real loan with realistic repayment terms.
So he's playing hardball, but always with the community's best interests in mind. What else is he focused on in these negotiations?
Rent. Specifically, he's looking at the rent projections the developers have presented for that industrial space they want to build.
Ah, yes. Predicting the future of real estate prices. Always a risky proposition.
Tell me about it. The developers have based their projections on general market averages, which is a common practice, but it also gives them some wiggle room to maybe lowball the numbers, especially when they're trying to secure a favorable loan.
So they're being a little strategic with their projections, I see. But Eric's no slouch when it comes to real estate. What's he bringing to the table?
Data, my friend. He's done his research and he's found something interesting. There's a table in the case study, Table 4, Panel C. And it shows comparable transactions for this type of industrial space.
Now, I know we've thrown around a lot of numbers and terms here, but what does this table actually tell us?
It tells us that the developers' rent projections might be way too low. The comparable transactions suggest that they could be charging significantly more for this space.
So Eric has them there. He's got the data to back up his position. This is where his attention to detail, his financial savvy, really gives him an edge.
Absolutely. And it highlights something really important about this whole case study. It's not enough to just have a good idea or even a shared goal. You need to be smart about the numbers. You need to understand the financial levers that can be pulled to maximize both the social and the economic impact.
It's like they say, the devil's in the details.
And so is the opportunity. The Spafford project is not just about one building or one neighborhood. It's a microcosm of a much bigger conversation about the role of finance in society.
Right. It's about challenging the status quo and asking ourselves if we can use these financial tools, these investments, to create a more just and equitable world.
Exactly. And that's what makes this case study so compelling. It's not just about spreadsheets and balance sheets. It's about people and their lives. It's about proving that doing good and doing well don't have to be mutually exclusive. They can actually go hand in hand.
And that's what makes this a deep dive. Thanks for joining us for another deep dive into the world of impact investing and the power of finance to create positive change. Until next time, keep asking the tough questions and remember that every investment has the potential to make a difference.